Knives, machetes, saws, and shears. Multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Warden's Watch Podcast is now on Patreon, combining the Thin Green Line Podcast and the Warden's Watch Podcast on Patreon to bring member-exclusive extra content, both video, audio, and with product deals as well. Become a member to support our podcast and get something extra. Search Warden's Watch Podcast on Patreon. This episode of the Thin Green Line, we have Rosanna Moore from the hit History Channel show, Alone. And what a cool conversation, John, to talk to one of these people that's experienced this and to see how real reality TV can be and the experiences that she gets to share with the viewers on the Alone TV show. And then she gets to share the behind the scenes with the Thin Green Line podcast. It's just great. And we just talked about what kind of dynamic people that we've had on the show. And Rosanna is no doubt one of those, and just a stand-up lady, starting with her nonprofit that she's trying to help out, you know, kids and introduce them to things that helped her out when she was a kid.
Yeah, she's amazing. And, you know, we've both had experience doing reality TV, and I know, honestly, I don't watch any reality TV, to be honest now, because I know our show and I know Northwoods Law are very authentic. And I know we as game wardens working for agency can't really let them fabricate or, you know, produce or back produce stuff.
Right.
But
right.
We know there's so much, you know, there's so much unreality in reality TV that it's still a produced message. Mm-hmm. And the thing I like about Alone is, and what I have just so much respect for Rose doing that show and the other people that have done that show successfully, is what you see is what you get. Mm. You know, they're filming their own reality. They're out there literally alone. That's why I think it's the biggest reality TV hit on the planet right now. It is just a huge, huge success in ninth season. And what I like about her story is, and what makes her so special to us, is that conservation background.
Yes.
Hunting with a bow. I think she's one of only two women in the US to have taken the Super Slam with a bow. And that's incredible. Mm-hmm. But just think of how well that prepared her for that experience. And she had some, we won't spoil alert it, guys, but grizzly bear problems and encounters, 37 days out there, very little food. It was nothing but a challenge. And that's an understatement. But it was her, you know, mental toughness of being an outdoor woman and being a conservationist through cold, through hot, through mornings, through evenings, and just being out there. And she said, I was never going to quit. I didn't see any of these threats that could, you know, take my life, like these big brown bears. I wasn't going to quit, but we'll let her story kind of dictate and tell you guys how it all went. But it's a fascinating story. One of our best. And kudos to her for representing not only conservation and not only, you know, the survival mindset, but women doing it, you know, awesomely out there. She's just a great steward for conservation with her nonprofit work, for sure.
Nope. Great interview. I know that you guys are going to really enjoy this one. So, hey, if you get an opportunity, please rate us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Every little bit helps. It kind of directs people to it and says, hey, this is a really good podcast to listen to. So enjoy Rosanna Moore. She's all alone. Never ever binge watch anything, and it just hooked me, and I had to watch like 7 seasons straight. I haven't seen I'm going to be honest, I haven't seen season 8 yet, Rosanna, so you can give me some, but I don't have Hulu yet, but I plan on getting it just so I can watch season 8, but I've never binge watched. I don't want to binge watch. It takes too much time. And my wife, about hour 3, she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm watching this show alone. I'm hooked. I can't believe it, because I want to see the next step and the next step. Survival is something we all play with, so to speak. We all prepare for. But Rosanna, you live survival. You lived, and I don't think I want to. Especially after watching Alone, I'm like, that really sucks. And if people have been out in the woods, I mean, just a bad day hunting when I get soaking wet and cold and come in. I mean, just, John, you know that the fire, the drying out process is just so good. And when you're on Alone, you don't get that opportunity. You get back to your little hovel that you've created. And yeah, that was fun at camp to do those survival skills, but it's not so fun in the real world. And then you're going to try to go the distance. So yeah, so Alone for me was very entertaining. And what I found was entertaining because it was real. And I could see it was real, and I could dissect the realness of it, which is really cool. So anyways, we're down at the Great American Outdoor Show, and Rosanna walked by, and she started talking to the group at Hunt of a Lifetime, and that's how we met, and we kind of exchanged. We did some photographs, so kind of Northwoods Law meets Alone, I said. And then Glenn Lucas says, hey, you got lunch ready for me today? And I said, yeah, but I'm doing a podcast at 1, so I'm going to suck you in, because when it comes to Northwoods Law, you're definitely that face that, you know, everybody asks me, oh yeah, you are on Northwoods Law, you know Glenn Lucas? So I'm like, yeah, I know Glenn Lucas. So
you probably said, I'm like, I made Glenn Lucas.
I might have said that once or twice, yeah. So thanks for joining us on the Thin Green Line, Rosanna, and tell us, hey, how you got involved with this. I know you own a sporting goods store. How you got involved with Alone, and yeah, this is the process, and the mental process of, hey, I want to be on Alone, because I know I don't want to be on Alone. How's that? Now, John Norris, you would be a great guy to be on Alone, John.
I don't know. First of all, thanks for coming on the show. I'm a fan of the show too, and I watch hardly any TV, as busy as my world is doing kind of some production on the TV side. But I think Alone is one of the most authentic shows out there when it comes to the survival genre. And there have been so many. I think of people I've worked with from the Naked and Afraid show and Survivor and all these others. And it's just, but you know, those just don't have the element of self-sustainability like you have to do out there, Rosanna. So my hat is off, and I don't know at this stage in my career, after going through some incidents like that for weeks at a time on a spec ops team, that I'd want to do it, or I'd be brave enough or have the patience. So kudos to you. How did that all start for you? How'd you get into that?
Well, first I want to say thank you for allowing me to come in and share my story with you. And if you haven't seen season 8, I feel bad that I'm going to probably spoil that for you.
I'll watch it anyways.
Yeah. I won't tell you the ending, but I'll tell you how my story went and then when I left the show. So thanks for letting me come and share it with you guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
So the show for me wasn't anything that I had ever planned either. I don't watch television. I actually had not seen the show prior. So, I had never sat around and thought, well, that would be fun to do. Actually, a producer reached out to me. So, you mentioned that I have a sporting goods store, and the sporting goods store is actually part of that story. About 8 years ago, I decided that I was going to open a sporting goods store. And I have never liked it, ever, not in 8 years. I don't like retail. But what it became for me was a platform to teach from a grassroots level. As soon as I started teaching archery, I saw a great need for teaching these kids. And I'm a big trapper. So I also saw that was going away. Nice. And I wanted to pass on that tradition as well. That kind of led to me doing a lot of seminars and a lot of teaching locally. And then I started to travel and do it. But because I did so much with trapping, trying to teach the need for predator control, and then eventually in all that I was doing, I saw that I needed to teach wildlife conservation from a different perspective, a little different than just the cultural aspect, because it's part of our culture here in Pennsylvania. Hunting is a very big part of what we do. We close our schools for hunting season. So it's you know, just something that our kids grow up doing. But I wanted to teach them a little bit differently. I wanted to teach them about habitat and habitat replacement and respecting our wildlife and fair chase. I wanted to teach them all of those things that were being left out. So I closed my sporting goods store, my first sporting goods store that I had run for about 6 years. And then I moved back home here in Wellsboro, Pennsylvania. It's a beautiful area and it's where I grew up running around the mountains here. So I started teaching again here and I was only open for about 3 months and COVID shut me down. So it was a rough start for me, but I thought, well, what I'll keep doing is posting online and doing like little online assignments for kids, letting them get involved by track identification and they could enter these contests and I would send them prizes. And it was going really well, but I was doing a lot of posting on social media. And a producer saw me on Instagram and she reached out to me and she said that she found it fascinating that I was a trapper and whatnot, and wanted to talk to me about the show. And I thought it was a scam.
I could see that.
Like, who is this person?
I, you know, just living in my own little world of hunting and trapping and teaching, you know, kids. I actually saw the email come through on my watch. So I just kind of swiped it away like, okay, whatever. I don't know what that is. So then later that night, I was like, I better maybe check that over again. So I did a little research about Alone and I thought, wow, that's pretty crazy. I might like to do that. And people ask me all the time why I would live with grizzly bears, because that was the twist for season 8, was they put us in the dangerous situation of living with grizzly bears. There was a salmon run that comes through there. So the grizzly bears come every year for that salmon run. And so we know that going in. And so people ask me all the time why I would make that choice to do that, you know, and starve and all the other things you experience out there. And I just tell them, I'm not quite sure. I think there may be something wrong with me. It's like a pretty crazy decision, but it was a challenge. And I love those challenges. I hunt all over the world with my bow, chasing a North American Super Slam with my bow. So I had been marketing that and showing that on social media. And before I left, I thought really long and hard about being on national TV. And you guys know this, when you go on national TV, it really changes everything about your life. People give you their opinions, whether they're kind or unkind. And it really, really affects everything about your life. And so I had to think really long and hard about whether I wanted to put myself in that situation, because I am, I'm not really a loner, but I do spend a lot of time alone. So as much as I do in my retail store and locally and always have done and interact with my community, I always, at the end of the day, when the store closes, I'm pretty much in the woods, or, you know, in the morning I'm in the woods. I spend a lot of time by myself and I enjoy that very much. So I knew that that would probably be a little tough for me to go back to after TV. But what I wanted to do with This Is My Quest, because I saw that need for teaching children, was I knew that I could take This As My Quest, turn it into a nonprofit, and teach on a larger platform.
Nice. Yep.
Because I only kept the retail store so that I had a platform to teach at. And this would put me on that larger platform. So I had the intention before I left to form my nonprofit. I said yes to Alone because I knew that that would give me a greater ability to do what I loved when I came back. So that's kind of the reason for saying yes to Alone. I do love a challenge, so I'm not going to say it. That wasn't that. I wanted that national platform to, you know, grow my nonprofit. So,
well, hopefully we can.
Nonprofit now has taken focus. It's formed, and that's what I'm doing more of. That's actually what I'm doing right now is the nonprofit. The sporting goods store is going away, and I'm going to focus on the nonprofit. So that's the story behind it. But I think you guys are probably a little more interested in the. Happened out there.
I'm sure our listeners are. So, yeah. And I am too. Okay. Okay. I admit it. Yeah. I want to know alone from the time you get dropped off. And then we'll talk about the nonprofit again, because I think that's a great idea and just the expansion thereof and what you have plans for that. But let's get into, you know, day one, the prep, the this, the that. I mean, that's, yeah, let's peel back this onion. I say that too much now.
Okay. So I hate onions. When I finally spoke with the producer and kind of got a better idea of what the show was and what they're hoping to see and the reality of it, because you do think it's TV and you won't be put into a dangerous situation because, you know, why would they do that? But they actually do. And that's actually what you end up doing. It's actually very dangerous. It's as real as it gets. So when I talked to the producer and I realized that all of this is very real and pretty dangerous, I decided that, yeah, that was the ultimate test. Because being a woman doing what I do, even though I travel by myself, when I hunt large game, you usually in some places have to have an outfitter. And I think that it's responsible to have an outfitter to teach you how to hunt that animal, because a lot of the animals like muskox in Greenland, I've never hunted, you know, those negative temperatures before. And I've certainly never hunted a muskox. So just, you know, being responsible, sometimes right. I go out and, you know, have to hunt with outfitters, but being a woman, they tend to want to help you more than you want help. And so going out there on the show, no one could help me. This was just a true test of no one intervening and me just testing myself and knowing if I could do it. So it was pretty easy once I factored in all of those things that I mentioned to make the decision to go on the show. So the other thing was, is there were over 20,000 people that applied for the show that actively applied. Wow. I didn't apply for the show. So it was like kind of last minute once they had reached out to me. So I didn't have a lot of time. So you send in audition videos and show them who you are and what you do for casting and, okay, you know, videos and whatever. And then they have to choose from over 20,000 people. So even though I made the decision that, yeah, I'll go ahead and pursue this, I still had to get through all of that process. So I made it to the top 24, I think it was 23 or 24. Which was amazing to me. And I thought, this will be the coolest story. I made it to the top, you know, 24 people. And I thought that was as far as I was going to go. But then I made the top 10, which was pretty amazing. When I got the phone call, I couldn't believe it. It was surreal. So anyways, I made the top 10. And then you only have just a few weeks to prepare. So it's very short notice. It's all very quick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they kind of give you an idea of what the climate's going to be like. And you have to get all of your stuff and decide what your 10 final items are, because you get to choose 10 primitive items to take with you. And
what did you choose?
You're off and running. And you.
What were your 10 items? Because yeah, I always look at that list and I'm like, I would pick this, and I'm just going to compare notes.
That's a question that piques me right away, you know, with our survival background is, what were the dilemmas of what to choose?
I mean,
give us your list and what were you on the fence on?
I think for me, the list was pretty simple because we're 8 seasons into this. So you can go back through and see what kind of works for other people. You're always in a different environment. This was the first time at Choco Lake. I know sometimes that they've, you know, crossed over and used the same place, but this was the first time Choco Lake, British Columbia. So you're not totally sure what to expect, but you get a good idea of what people have done in the past. And I know what I use a lot just in my everyday, you know, practices when I'm out there. So I was really torn between my knife. I have a pretty amazing knife that a knife maker makes for me. And it's a very large knife, very thick spine. And I use that to even split wood. This knife goes everywhere with me and has been on every hunting trip all over the world. But I needed to make a choice between that knife and a multi-tool. The multi-tool will have a small knife on it that I can utilize and take a saw and then have all of those other items on that multi-tool. So that's really where I was torn. And then when I got out there, because I took the multi-tool, saw, and an axe. So those for, you know, my main tools. Those were the three items that I took. Hindsight, I would have left the axe, taken my knife and my multi-tool and a saw. Once you are pretty deep into starvation, you're not really swinging an axe too awful much.
Right.
yeah, right. I just really didn't use it. So after the first, I think the most I ever used my axe for was, it was heavy enough that I could kind of drop it down on the limbs and snap them off. But that got really heavy to do after a while. So,
interesting.
But yeah. the multi-tube proved itself in spades, I would take it, right? Was it very, very useful?
Yeah, the needle nose pliers on that, they were really, really, really handy, because what I ended up doing was, I think I set like 46 snares when I was out there. So twisting those snares, that was super handy. I had wire cutters on it for my snare wire. And then I also tied flies, because we couldn't use live bait this season. This was a really restrictive season. You guys haven't seen this one yet, but I think they jokingly call this one the starvation season.
Right. So, they stacked it against you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, they stepped it up, stepped up the challenge.
Brutal. It was pretty tough. We weren't allowed to eat squirrels, rats, mice. One of the big reasons that they took me is because I'm a trapper. And then I got out there and I wasn't allowed to trap.
Man, what a slap.
Yeah. So luckily I ended up snaring two rabbits. The one, you know, didn't make the show because they medically extracted me on day 37. You'd think that these numbers would be more memorable to me, but I do, as time goes on, I keep not remembering I think it was 37 days. So bad. But day 37, they extracted me. So my last rabbit was in the snare, but, he didn't make the show. So I did snare two rabbits while I was out there, but without those pliers, it would have been super hard to, you know, craft all those snares and make tie flies. Yeah. So
one rabbit in 37 days. Tool. Did you snare anything else? It was one rabbit in 37 days if you never got the second rabbit.
No, so you weren't allowed. There's nothing else you're allowed to snare.
So you had one rabbit in 37 days.
Yeah.
With 40 something snares set every day.
Yeah. So if you, you have to kind of think, so it's the largest downturn of rabbits in like 10 years. It was a pretty low number of rabbits. That's why I think there are only two of us that snared rabbits. Nobody else even bothered setting them because there were just hardly any rabbits. But, so think about like, going out in the woods to an area you've never been before and just looking around thinking, if I were a rabbit, where would I run? You know, just trying to figure them out, and you have a snare the size of your fist and you've got to set that somewhere in those woods that a rabbit is going to run through it. So you set all over the place. Oh, and then the other thing was a bobcat kept coming through and pushing all my snares out of the way because he smelled me. So moving them out of the way. So I would have to every day like go out and reset my snares, and in the snow there's bobcat prints to everyone. And then he actually walked right up to my shelter. He was smelling me and following me. So that was kind of neat, but he was a bit of a pain. I was really worried that if I had gotten another rabbit that he would take those out of my line, but I didn't get another one. So yeah, two rabbits in 37 days and the one I didn't get to eat. So not a lot of food. I foraged as much as I could. I ate a lot of berries, wild onions, you know, just what was left. We were so late in the year. But as far as fishing, we weren't allowed to use live bait or any live material for bait. There was a bait ban in the lake. So I was cutting my hair and tying flies with my hair and paracord. And I made a little shadow box of all the flies that were left in my bag when they brought my stuff back. But
cool.
It was hard. It was tough.
And you never caught a fish on your hair?
No, I didn't. So my shoreline was so shallow, I couldn't throw it far enough because you're hand lining. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't throw it far enough to get it out to deep water because we had restrictions on fish size too. And we weren't allowed to eat the salmon.
Wow.
So I was starving to death, stepping over salmon that had washed up on the shore.
That is a brutal restriction.
Kind of
shocked to hear this, you know, given the challenge in and of itself with what is there, if it's readily available. But so first day you get there, you've got your gear. Take us through that. Take us through what day one and day 37 look like and what your routine was and how it changed, how it adapted.
And what you would have done different. I think you would have ate a whole bunch of, you know, Twinkies before you got there, had you known.
tried to bulk up and burn fat reserves. Exactly. Try to get some fat reserves.
You grew up in the 80s, Twinkies.
Okay. What are they eating now?
So you Jerky. Do, if you can find bugs out there, you do eat bugs. I did eat some ants and some grasshoppers and, you know, little things that really don't amount to too awful much, but they're, if you can find them, they're there, you eat them. But the first day when they dropped me off, there's a thing, it's called drop shock. So some people experience that when they're dropped off. You have, like, you know, the camera crews are on the boat or helicopter or whatever, getting the video of you as they're leaving. So you're going to be completely by yourself now, you know, so they drop you off and then all of that chaos is pulling away. And I guess some people get what's called drop shock and then they panic. It's something that they tell you about as a possibility, but I am not kidding when I tell you, I couldn't wait for them to go. I wanted them to leave, like, okay, go already. Cause I wanted to explore. I felt like a little kid, like, yeah, you can just do whatever you want. There's no one here to tell you what you can and can't do. And I was so excited to get going on this challenge. So I wanted them to pull away faster. It was
awesome.
Exciting.
I love that attitude.
It was inspiring. Cool. Yeah. And so first I, of course, wanted to, you know, make sure that I had a place for a fire. The wind was blowing down off that lake so strongly that I knew that I had to tuck back in so that I could have a fire. And I didn't start a forest fire, you know, at the same time. Right. So I wanted to make sure I had everything set up right and I got my water going first. So I did that. And then I just kind of walked around and explored a little bit to see where I could put up a shelter. That, I think it was that first night that we had a huge electric storm, the worst lightning storm I've ever seen in my life. And you don't have a shelter or anything yet. So you're just under a tarp. But it was so crazy being on that lake and the lightning as bright as it was. So I got through that night and it was fine. And you know that the grizzly bears are all over there. There was a couple hundred grizzly bears that they had counted in that area. They come there every year for that salmon run. Most of the salmon didn't run, though, because there was a landslide that blocked the run in the Fraser River. So lots of bears, not a lot of food. So you know, at any point, you're going to see a grizzly bear coming down that shoreline. So with that in mind, everything you're doing, you're just kind of watching for these grizzly bears just to make sure that you see them before they see you, maybe, which rarely ever happens. They're very quiet and very sneaky. So they usually, you know, see you, have smelled you before you even see them. So, it was that first night. You'll see when you watch. So I got really sick. When you're eating wild onions, there's another plant that mimics a wild onion. It's called death camas. Oh. And so you get a little concerned when you're, quite possibly be what you got mixed with some onions. So I just waited it out. And when I was, it was in the middle of the night that I started getting really sick. And I thought the last thing I want to do is vomit on national TV. So I tried really hard to get off camera, but I forgot my mic was attached right here. Huh. So that's the very first episode. We've done that stuff.
Bad. Yeah.
All of the audio of me so sick. Mm. So anything I did eat prior was no longer there. So I didn't have, it didn't matter what I had stocked up before, the day before, it's all gone. So I started in a rough situation. So I was sick for a couple of days. I just couldn't do anything. And then I think it's just your stomach is trying to adjust to all that new stuff that you're putting into it.
Sure.
So, and I had boiled the water, so I knew it wasn't the water, but I don't know exactly what it was. A local girl made me a t-shirt that it wasn't the berries because they tried to make it look like it might've been the berries. It wasn't the berries. I continued to eat those the rest of the time. They're called Kinnikinick berries and they were fine. So I have a t-shirt that says it wasn't the berries because that's like the number one question that everybody asks. Why would you eat the berries? Right. It wasn't the berries. I ate those for 37 days. So it just, I don't know. There was a lot going on, you know, it's a whole new environment. So I got really sick. So I started with a very empty stomach. So I was hungry from that point on and would find little things, but there were fire. There was still forageable at that time. So foraging, and it was still exciting. And as sick as I was, I think that that when people would talk to me after they watched the first episode, they're like, I would have quit right there. Because if you think about it, like when you're home and you are, you have the flu and you're really sick, like you just want to be in the comfort of your bed. But I knew it would be fine. I knew it would pass and I would be okay. I just needed to wait out a couple of days. So I got back on my feet and decided that I needed to move. I couldn't stay there. It was like a wind tunnel where I was. My tarp was like blowing up in the air and I couldn't keep any, the fire was blowing all over ash. I knew that I needed to relocate. So I started my trek around the lake, see where I could find a new place. I think I ended up 3/4 of a mile down shore, which means that you have to move all of your stuff, your giant case of camera equipment, and your bag and all your stuff. You have to relocate. So I was already really weak. So what I did was I carved like a walking stick because those, the shore was really hard to walk on. And that was, so day three, I found my spot. So day 4 or 5, I think it might've been day 5 is when I packed everything on my back and headed down the beach. So
That took some time.
Exciting to go to a new spot.
Yeah.
When I found my new spot though, that was the funny part. And I should have taken that as a sign. When I found my new spot down the beach, it was this great little area. It had a little clearing in it, had a great large game trail. And I eventually found that it was the lake crossed over to a lagoon. And so the large game were coming through there quite a bit. And so I thought, this is perfect. So I'll set up my camp here. So before I went and got all my stuff, I walk back out on the beach and I take my pink paracord and I'm tying it on a tree. And I'm talking about how this is the perfect place. And I finally found my home and I turn my head to the left and there are 3 grizzly bears running straight at me.
That was my next question is, you know, we dropped this massive bear presence, you know, all around you. And when you first started seeing them, so it wasn't too long after you landed, you were into bears.
Yeah. They were running straight at me. It was a mother and her 2 cubs, but they were ready to leave mom because they were almost the size of her. And they were just amazing running at me. So I'm trying to tuck back into the woods and I have this little JVC hand camera and I'm like tapping on the screen, trying to get it to focus on the bears, not the branches. So the footage was really terrible. So they ended up not being able to use that because I could hear my heart beating in my ears. Like it was craziest situation because I have no shelter. I don't have all of my stuff. I just have what's in my pack. I did have my bow with me, but a long bow against 3 grizzly bears, you know.
Good luck. Yeah, not so good.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're protected there. So you really try hard to just stay out of their way. And so I just needed to get out of their way, but I didn't know what way they were going. So I just went up on the hill and kind of, you know, crouched down and tried to watch and listen, but I couldn't hear because my heart was beating so loudly in my ears. And I was just like trying to calm myself down so that I could focus because you have to stay present in all of that or else you'll panic a bit. And so I just waited and they went down around me. I think her interest was because I saw her nose come up. She must have winded me. So I think she just wanted to get her cubs away from me. So she dropped down around me on that large game trail over to the lagoon. So yeah, that should have been my first sign that was actually a grizzly bear crossover, not just a large game trail.
Yeah, one of their dedicated trails sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah. So I went and got all my stuff and I set up my camp right near there. And that was the beginning of 8 grizzly bears. So really interesting. Over the time that I was there, you see a lot of bears, you hear a lot of bears, and with bears, you tend to think about it every second. It consumes you because you have to be safe. If you just forget about the bears and try to go on with what you're doing, then, you know, you're not being as cautious as you need to be in a dangerous situation. Your brain kind of resets to be in that dangerous situation. And even if you're cutting a tree down, you're thinking, if a bear comes from there, this is what I'm going to do. There's my bow. There's my knife. So even when you're sawing a tree, you're planning what's going to happen. If I stand up and turn around, there's a grizzly bear behind me. So you do that for 37 days and it kind of sets you on a rough path for recovery when you come home. So that was a little hard after I came home. And it probably wouldn't have been so bad had I not had the encounter with the last bear that I had, which is an interesting story, but I'll hold off a little bit on telling you that because that was right before they medically extracted me. So over the time that I was there, I was always excited to be there. Every day, the snow was coming down a little bit farther on the mountain, and I just, yeah. I would want to take my camera out and see the snow line coming down, getting closer. And I remember I constantly said to them, thank you for this opportunity, because yeah. every day was a new challenge and it was just amazing being out there. So I was grateful for all of it the entire time. I have two children, so they thought that that would be something that would, you know, emotionally get to me after a while. But my daughter is 27 and my son is 24, and they're pretty amazing kids. So they're okay without me. And I knew, you know, I would go home eventually. So the being alone part was not an issue for me. I didn't struggle with that. I know that a lot of people do. I mean, that's the premise of the show, you know, how long before being alone gets to you, but it really didn't get to me.
It would get to me. I'm sorry. I'm just a social person.
Well, it's, you know, that's an interesting topic. And I want to go back to just to pause and go back to when we first introduced you and you said, well, I spent a lot of time alone in the woods and, you know, this is now national public attention from television. Now I'm going to be faced with some challenges. And ironically, I share your same sentiment because even though I'm very public, I went to grad school with a lot of therapist friends and they said, dude, we can't figure you out. You are the most public introvert I've ever known. You know, you're on TV, you're a game warden, you present, you speak, you're in a freaking rock and roll band, but all you want to do is get in the woods by yourself with yourself or a couple other people. And you're always hunting. You're never going to parties. You're never doing a bunch of these PR events. And that was the hard part for me. And again, empathizing with, you know, you, all of those questions, all of that attention, telling the story so many times, and it just gets to where, you know, so many people are benefiting from that story. I always look at it as always that blessing and opportunity to pay something forward, especially us on the Thin Green Line, Glenn, Wayne, myself as game wardens. I mean, we are so thin on the Thin Green Line that we, no matter how tired we get, we need to keep telling that story, you know, for succession, for the future generation and for wildlife, but it's draining, you know? And so for you to go there, as somebody that really can thrive on being alone and find your spirit, so to speak, with that challenge, kind of gives you an advantage, I think, to so many of the extroverted people that get into the show for those reasons, because they don't mind the attention and now they want to do the challenge. And it's not a diss one way or the other. It's just the different personality types. So I struggle with that too, quite honestly. And I still do. So I'm fascinated by your journey and really, really intrigued by it.
Thanks. I think for me, and most people that know me, they know that that I do really well on my own. I feel like that's been the majority of my life is being on my own. I had, you know, I had kids and, you know, but that's a little bit different, you know, being a mother and, you know, being very social all the time. I still always liked, you know, that time of never really, really was a big fan of hanging out at parties, like you said, you know, not something I ever liked to do. So I just, from the time that I was a little kid, even being back here in my hometown, people say all the time, oh my gosh, I didn't know all this stuff about you. Really nobody quiet, growing up. It was just me. I was the quiet one, you know, and just kind of kept to myself, had a rough, really rough childhood. And so I grew up, you know, running around the mountains in a little town called Asif down in, you know, outside of Wellsboro, Pine Creek Gorge running through. So I was always, you know, trout fishing or, you know, somewhere in the woods by myself. So this is just who I've always been. I very much enjoy people. I'm not a person that says, I hate people. I hear people say that all the time. And I'm goodness. I love people. I love meeting people. I love traveling and meeting them. But I like to go away from that. So that probably was one of the hardest things for me coming back from the show and there being so many more people and so many opinions, you know, because the show really directs how they want people to view you. I mean, you're out there alone, you're telling your story and you're living your story out. But at the end of it, they pick and choose what gets to be seen, you know, so it kind of shapes people's opinions of you. Right. And being a hunter and a large game hunter, I did get a little bit of feedback from some women that sent me some nasty messages about being a trophy hunter. And on my social media platform, which is funny because all you have to do is scroll a little bit farther and you see every single post I do is about teaching conservation. So, you know, getting those opinions and not saying anything and just letting it go. And because, you know, one of those really negative messages will overshadow the 100 other messages that you had gotten that were positive.
Right.
It's very hard. So, yeah, that was the hard part for me was having to adjust. Yeah.
And we say it all the time, hunters are conservationists. And I keep saying that to everybody. They put their money where their mouth is, more so than any animal rightist does. Yeah, certainly we invest in conservation as hunters. Shooting people that do shooting sports invest in conservation, whether they know it or not, because they buy ammo, they buy guns. And the Pittman-Robinson Act, thank God for that, that funds all these things from that. And so hunters are conservation. Yes, more so than, you know, any other people. I swear, we invest in our our resources. So, and we see that every day, huh, Glenn? It's just, you know, and the passion among them, and the passion among, you know, for, that you're teaching. So yeah, and we all got the negative responses, and still do.
I was gonna say the opinions. I kind of got a chuckle. I'll never forget the phone call I got. Someone called. Oh, they had a fishing question, which is usually just a ploy to get me to call them back. So I called this one man back, and he critiqued me the way that I climbed the ladder to put the bird back and how I did so many things wrong. I'm like, okay, great talking to you.
Yeah, I saw you last night on TV, and now that ladder, you know, that wasn't secured, right? Oh, yeah.
And so when you said those things, I'm like, yep, I've been there to your opinions. I respect your opinion. Thanks for sharing it.
Did he really have he didn't really have a fishing question, did he?
No, he did not. No, he legit told me. I just said that so you called me back.
Just want to lure you in, Glenn. Yeah.
Here I am.
But, yeah, no doubt, yeah, so.
If you can't laugh about it, then you won't even be able to deal with it. I know that a lot of my friends were like, you have to stop reading. Reddit is like the devil's platform. That place is a horrible place. Like, there's nobody moderating. There's no way to know who these people are. And oh my goodness, they have never, there are people that, you know everything about the outdoors and have never gone out there and done it, but they will tell you.
Yep.
So, and they will tell you in the harshest way. So I had to leave a few platforms and just not, because I think the survival Alone I think ended up being the number one show on cable last year.
Yeah.
So there's a big following, and these people have followed Alone for all 8 seasons, and they have watched them over and over and over, and they critique us like on a very deep level. And so you have to hear that. They need to tell you that. And so you hear a lot about, you know, the experts that are watching.
Yeah. And I do that, but I keep it to myself. I'm like, I would have done this, I would have done that. And, you know, and critique me against all these people and see if I can get to the end of the show. But
I find it funny because if they had all that time to watch those so many times over and over, that means they weren't outside. Doing it, they were just watching others do it. So
surviving.
I had to see the end. Okay, I just had to see it. I'm sorry. I just.
I probably owe Rose an apology. I've never heard of the show Alone until today. I don't watch TV. I don't watch the news.
Does you sound just like her?
I have no idea. So I apologize, but I'm like, well, Alone sounds interesting, and here you are. But
don't try it because you'll binge watch. I swear.
I just don't.
I hate to say it. It's my wife is like, this isn't even interesting. I'm like, no, it is. It's this mental game. It's for the next step. It's the next, you know. And she's like, yeah, I'm all set. So Wayne sat there on the couch by himself, binge watching Alone.
Alone. Yeah, it's.
And I don't like watching TV either. It's just a waste of time. But I'm like, oh, I got hooked. Sorry.
No, I never watched it either. So you don't have to apologize.
Yeah, no. I'm
but like, will you watch the next season?
I will, because there now I feel like
you're part of it.
You can relate so personally.
I can
now.
Relate to them. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I also know that there's so much more to each one of their story than what you guys will ever get to see. So, you know, I'll connect with all of them, just like previous participants have connected with me. And we all become friends, and
right,
you know, I don't know. It's kind of like we're or a very small percentage of people that have ever just got to really go out there and be left alone to try it.
I got thrown in.
I'll watch it, but I'll also know that there's a lot more than what we're seeing.
I got thrown in, but can I ask you a question, Rose? You said it's all how the producers kind of choose to portray, I don't want to call you a character, but each person. And I don't think there's anything more true being on my side of it as well. Do you believe that they portrayed you in the right way? And also maybe a separate question of the way you would have liked.
Yeah. So I think I'm supposed to be careful about how I answer.
I figured. I didn't mean to put you. So if you don't want to answer, that's fine.
No, it's fine. I actually appreciate the opportunity to answer that question, and I'll try to be as kind as the History Channel would like me to be. But I don't love how they portrayed me. Mm-hmm. I think that there's so much more depth to who I am and what I do, and I live with such purpose and passion for that purpose that that's what why they excluded most of what I said. I really did not. I made it 9 of 11 episodes and you hardly saw me because everything I did, I talked to that camera like I was talking to one of the kids here at my shop. Everything was an educational opportunity. The pine borer beetles that were in the tree that I cut down that was dead, you know, I was talking about those. Just every single thing I did about, you know, so there being so many predators and not enough prey that I was just another predator in, you know, the wolves and the mountain lions and the grizzly bears and the black bears and the lynx and the bobcat and just everything out there. And there was nothing, you know, for us to eat and the moose populations are down. And so I talked about all of that and all of that got cut out. So I was kind of portrayed as the blonde trophy hunter.
Yeah.
So. I can't say I love how I was portrayed. And I think that people didn't really get to see the things that I did do. Like they didn't get to see any, I spent hours with all kinds of camera angles on those fishing lures that I tied, you know, the flies. I tied so many flies. They didn't show 1 second of that. The hours and hours and hours that I would sit there staring at the woods hunting. Nobody saw how many hours I spent hunting. What else did I, there
the was bear a, trap you found?
Oh, I'll show you this. Let me grab this. I'm going to try not to reach in front of the camera here, but this is pretty cool. They never showed this. So nobody's actually seen this. So I'll show it to you guys.
Exclusive.
I know, right? I wanted to do a video. I do a few little clips on my YouTube channel. And I did see on Reddit that they put that in a forum. They pull my videos over and they say, this is why what we think they should be showing. Rose made all this cool stuff and they never showed it. So they do talk about that over on Reddit, but they never showed any of my stuff. So the first day that I was there, I found this. It's just a piece of shale.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, that will be a great little notepad. And then I found a skinnier piece of shale. And nice. So I kept notes. I don't know if you can see.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Says days on alone, and then I kept track of all of my days on alone. And this is my snare wire around it that held my pencil.
Oh, you would think a producer would love that little piece.
That's deep.
Yeah, that would be, that's your scribe. That's your journal. Yep. That's like prehistoric.
It's like, caveman document. Stuff.
Yeah, that's being in prison, marking on the wall. That's
teach some glyphs while you're out there. Grizzly stalking.
On the back of it, it says September 18th, 2020 was my drop date. So I did keep notes on the back of this. And then 3 grizzly bears chased me on 9/22 and 10/14. Another grizzly bear chased me. It has the date of when I got my first rabbit. So this little piece of shale and this little pin or pencil, I kept calling it, was just something neat and different that they didn't show. So there was a ton that they didn't show about me, but I think that if I could go back and do it over again, I wouldn't talk about the conservation side. And I wouldn't talk about education. I just would not talk about any of it because most everything that I did got cut out. So I don't love how I was portrayed, but it is what it is. You know, so it did give me that recognition so that I can grow my nonprofit. And that's really what I'm most grateful for. So.
Yeah, that's huge. And kudos to you for trying to put out the, you know, the conservation story in real time in the most brutal conditions. And we had a little bit of that issue with Wild Justice as well. The 3 seasons we did that show for Nat Geo, is if we weren't kicking in doors on a high-risk search warrant as game wardens for methamphetamine being traded for deer meat or parts or doing cartel marijuana raids, they didn't want to put it on TV. I mean, we did so many conservation stories of validating a first buck, helping somebody get out of a hot area like on an ATV on a deer opener. And I think out of three seasons, we might have had 4 or 5 3-minute stories of hunters being portrayed in a positive light, conservation being a model that works to protect everything and keep things in balance. And I would push, just like you're doing, to try to get that message out, because I knew this was probably our biggest opportunity we're going to have as a department. Mm. And it just wasn't the sensational A story that got the ratings. And I get that. I get that's what drives these production companies. We're still very grateful for the show. Like Northwoods Law with Wayne and Glenn and all the guys in Maine, you know, in Texas with Lone Star State. Mm-hmm. We can't get enough of those just for the story of not just game wardens, but conservation as a whole. And, but it was really disheartening to see so little of that portrayed. And once we had all the recruitment and retention, we had 3 more seasons offered because it was a number one hit. And our chief, Nancy Foley at the time, who's been a guest on our other podcast, Warden's Watch, we decided to say, no, it wasn't worth it. We got everything we could out of it. We didn't need more sensational stories. We didn't need everybody killing animals looking like they were, you know, just ugly, criminals. Evil felons, that yeah. There was a good side to it. So anyway, I completely admire what you tried to do and that you can still use that, you know, with the attention, use those powers for good, so to speak, moving forward.
Yeah, thanks. And I think that that's the only way that you can look at it. I mean, I could walk away from it and just really put alone behind me, but I still tell all the stories because it was an amazing experience. Mm. The real, you know, everyday story of it was
incredible.
And I'm always free to tell that story. But it also grabs the attention of the young viewers of that show. I was surprised at how many children watch Alone. So I did a lot of speaking at trapping seminars. I was out at the National Trapping Association's convention in where was I? It was all over the place this summer talking about Alone. It was Iowa. And there were so many children there. They put me in the kids' cave so that I could, you know, teach the kids about trapping and interact with them. I'm at the kids' stuff. But anyways, I also got to tell my story. And there were so many kids there that wanted my autograph because they watched the show, because the fantasy of it. It's really amazing to have a television show that these little kids can watch and imagine what it would be like to be out there, because they want to be out there. You know, they want that opportunity. So that kind of ignites something and piques their interest a little bit. So I really do love that, that all of the, you know, little people that watch this show always come to see me and want to hear my story. And it's a great opportunity. So as much as I maybe don't like how everybody, you know, perceived me from the show. I mean, they could have taken any turn they wanted. They could have made me look like a horrible person if they wanted. They didn't do that. So I do appreciate that.
Still a win.
Yeah, it really is.
Did the kids always want to hear when you were hunted by the grizzly? Is that like the story you tell the little kids? Yeah.
So actually more than the grizzly bear is the grizzly bear trap that I found. Because it's just so ironic that I'm a trapper. They took me because I'm a trapper. And I dug out of the ground an old Newhouse number 5, 1905 grizzly bear trap.
Awesome. Wow.
Yeah.
Did you get to keep it?
But some people will say, are you sure that wasn't planted? Well, I don't think that anybody else would have known what it was. I knew because a little bit of the spring, just a tiny bit, was above the ground. But I was back in cutting spruce boughs for my shelter. My fit of shelter never even made the show. Like, I built this raised bed and like had everything organized. In my none of it made the show.
It looked way too nice. Yeah.
It's crazy.
I'm like, why was your shelter so bad? I'm like, because you saw it at the beginning. Like, it was, you know, at the end, I had taken like carpets of moss and like carted them all back and chinked the entire thing with moss and then did a shingle system on the outside. I built a door from an old trapper's cabin that I found. I took some old nails and pulled them out. And then I came back and out of some smaller lodge pole, I built a door. And so anyways, I was back in this tree because there was so much snow that when I would try to cut them, it would cover me. So I would get back in the tree and cut the limbs off up close to the tree. And then under this spruce tree, there was a big fallen old tree. Under that was the bear trap. So there's just no way that this bear trap was planted. So I legitimately found this trap out there. And it was a really, really cool trap. I mean, it was in great shape. It was just buried under that tree that must have fallen on it. So, yeah, I found this bear trap. And then the big question is, did you get to keep it? And so everybody
came to my mind
the question than the actual, you know, grizzly bear story, because they didn't show the whole grizzly bear story either. So people really don't know that unless I tell it.
Mm.
So the bear trap was cool. I didn't get to keep it. I did have to take it back and bury it.
Oh, bummer.
Is that considered an artifact?
Quite the relic. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we were on
what happened to Finders Keepers? That was the 80s too, wasn't it, Glenn? It just looks at me. Yeah.
So I didn't get to keep my bear trap, but because I was on an old grizzly bear trap line, I found the remnants of that trapper's cabin. I found the grizzly bear trap. Grizzly bears nonstop outside my shelter. When you're sitting under a tarp and they're breathing behind you, it's super.
Jeez.
Well, yeah, because you're not sure what they're going to do. You know, it's their choice. Whatever happens from that point is not your choice. So, and there's a moment on there that you see me get really upset. And I'm not a big crier. I don't like to cry, especially not on national television. But So I had the set, like, seven different grizzly bears, and then I knew that they're just passing through, or, you know, it's, of course, you get excited, and each time it's a little less concerning. You just wait it out, and you can keep a level head about it. But the last grizzly bear, I couldn't figure out how to get him to go away. And so that moment that you see me so upset on camera is because I had tried everything. That situation went on for 3 hours. So he was in my camp. I was talking to the camera in the morning. And I walk around my shelter to go in and get the rest of my stuff so that I can go for a hike and, you know, find food and hunt and whatever. And there was a grizzly bear standing on the other side of my shelter watching me. Mm. And so I yelled at the bear and scared him off. And so that audio was there, but they didn't use it because, you know, there was no video. So scared him off. He ran up in the woods. And then I needed to try to figure out. So when you go into starvation, your brain atrophies, you go into like a depressive state. It's very easy for you to get into that state and not be able to get out of it. That's one of the things about being alone out there. You start really thinking about things and, you know, demons maybe come back to haunt you, and you really evaluate your whole life. And that's part of it, is because you're in starvation mode and you're alone. So everything is, you're very sensitive to everything. So the bear, I was pretty shaken up that he was just sitting there watching me and I didn't hear him. So I calmed myself down, collected myself, and I knew I needed to figure out where he came from. If he came from up on the mountain and not across the beach, then I knew he came because he smelled me. If they're coming across the beach, they're just crossing through, is what I had seen. That was kind of their patterns. So I take the camera out to the beach. After I think I stayed at my shelter for maybe 30 or 40 minutes, just trying to let him go away. And I said to the camera, I don't think I've seen the last of him. So I'm like, we got to figure out where he came from, because your camera is like that person that you talk to all the time. So I take my camera out and I'm like, there's no tracks on the beach. And I'm like talking to the camera. So the camera's facing the lake. I'm facing the woods, so I can watch and see where he's coming from if he comes back out, because I scared him up on the mountain. Well, I didn't know that he had the whole time been circling me and was watching me. So I'm talking to the camera, and when you watch it, now you'll look, because some people miss it, but when they go back and watch it, they see him. So I'm talking to the camera and I'm like, his tracks, he did not come down the beach. He wasn't just passing through. He was coming for me. He didn't know what I was, but he smelled me. And it's late in the year and they're hungry and they want to go hibernate. And as I'm telling the camera this, he's standing behind me. He came out behind me and he's just standing there. So when I went back after he was finally gone, I counted my last footsteps to his steps. We were 25 steps apart.
Jeez.
So he was just standing back there watching me. And I turn around and I see him. And then I yell and I grab my camera and I start backing up to the woods and I'm yelling at this bear. And he starts to go, but then he changes his mind and he stands up in the air and he turns around and he starts to come back my way. So once I got in the woods, I don't know what my plan was. It was just to maybe get a tree to my back. because there's really nowhere to go to get away from this bear. So anyways, that just went on for a long time. And then the bear kept circling me, and then he went out into, like, I called it my swamp. And I would see him every once in a while out there. So it went on for a really long time. And then I got really upset and I pulled out. So if you've watched Alone, there's a tap out button. You can at any point in time tap out, but you can't take it back. Once you hit that button, if you change your mind between the time that you hit the button and they get there, they're still taking you out.
Right.
You have to really think about hitting that button. So while this bear, I can see him every once in a while, and I'm thinking, I don't know what to do, because I had an air horn. I blew that at him, and I had a bear banger, and I shot that off, and this bear didn't care anymore. They get desensitized to it.
He was on to that, yeah.
Yeah, he knew that it didn't hurt him when it happened. It startled him, but it didn't hurt him. And so I think he just was not sure what to do, because I did make a lot of noise. So he's trying to decide, and I don't know what to do anymore. And so I started crying. I take out my button and I'm like, you know what? I do have children, and this is a television show. So at some point I have to pick me over this show, saying, you know. And so I thought about it, and I thought, you know, by the time they get here, it's going to be over. Minimum of like an hour, hour and a half, maybe 2 hours before they could get to me. It depends on the water, because we had really high waves, and that bear will have made his decision by then. So it's so many things going through your head. Like, it's not my choice whether I live or die right now, because that bear is going to make that decision. There's nothing I can do. So you're thinking about how you're going to fight that grizzly bear if you have to. And I know it's ridiculous. One of my customers says, that's ridiculous. You're not going to fight a grizzly bear. And I said, yes, I am. I may not win, but yes, I am. I mean, you're not going to lay down, and you know,
there it is.
So the reality of that situation was very, very real and very dangerous. So, that's what's, sorry. I forgot to shut my store phone off. So that's what's kind of neat about the show, is that, you know, that you're really in those situations. There's nobody there to help you. You can't. And when you realize you can't pick up a phone and call for help, you can't yell for help. Here, you can yell for help and probably someone's going to come, or you have a phone and you're standing there in that situation and there's nothing you can do. So once I realized that, you know, the bear will have made his decision at that point, I just was like, just, you have to calm down and you have to think about this situation. And then I decided to stay, and I stayed, and he went away. He just kind of wandered off, and that was the grizzly bear story. It's pretty crazy.
Pretty intense. Well,
fortunately, he wandered off. Did you ever see that bear again, or did you ever recognize him specifically coming back? Because he seemed like he was the boldest you encountered, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously. But
yep, none of them ever were anything more than just wondering what I was, or just passing through, or
Yeah.
So I actually was only there. I can't remember if that was like, it was the early 30s. I can't remember what day exactly that was. You do lose track out there. It's a little tough to keep track of, you know, your days, even though you're marking them on a thing. But it was only maybe a week later that I got medically extracted. So I didn't see him again. It doesn't mean he wasn't there. I did take video of bear tracks again following my trap line when I went up in the woods, but nothing came down to my shelter again.
Gotcha.
But yeah, it was, he definitely put me back into my space. Like, as comfortable as I was at wandering all over that mountain, he pushed me back into that space of not being so sure that I wanted to venture out too far.
Right.
You know, it really grounds you for a couple of days, and then I would, you know, venture back out. But at that point, my body was in starvation, and my body stopped circulating blood to my feet. So I ended up with some deep tissue frostbite, and I didn't want to go. So, and I'm pretty stubborn. Sometimes I put myself in dangerous situations just to finish what it is that I'm doing. And so they said they weren't going to give me that choice. So they actually picked me up and carried me out of there, which I think was a little more dramatic than it needed to be. I think I probably could have, you know, walked out, but.
But it made for good television.
So, yeah. And that's a pretty tough one to deal with too, because as being as stubborn as I am, to be medically extracted when you don't want to go,
Right.
That's a hard pill to swallow. I got back to recovery and I was there for like 11 days, but it was every day I didn't want to talk to anybody. And I was so disappointed in myself and who I am and what my capabilities were. And I still struggle with it. I just always say that 37 days is nothing. And I wish I could have gone so much longer, but I didn't have that choice. And so I didn't get to finish what it was that I was out there for. Right. So that was mentally pretty difficult to deal with.
But you pushed through right up to the frostbite when it wasn't your choice. You know, you weren't going to quit. That's incredible. If they did like one of these reunion shows, like they seem to do on some of the other survival shows, would you go back and do it?
Yeah, definitely would. It's, I think that I want to say no, because there's so many things that I didn't love about it not being my real story, but I can't say no to a challenge. It's just, I don't know. It's just who I am. If I had the opportunity to prove to myself that I could finish it, I would take it.
Yeah. It's cool. Yeah.
And what would you do different? Would you bring something, like you said, you bring your knife instead of the axe. Is there any other ideas that you've had of going back? And
I am super stubborn and I always look back at a situation and think, what were you thinking? Being so stubborn all the time. So you can, as some of your 10 items, you can take rations. So you can take food. But I was like, no, I'll be fine. I can do this without food. So I was only one of just a couple of people that didn't. I think there may have been three or four of us that didn't take rations. So any little bit of extra, you know, food is going to help prolong your stay and your health. And so I should have probably given up something else and taken food.
In the pecking order, since I haven't seen the show, were you in the middle of the group?
For my time there?
Yeah, your time there.
Yeah. Yeah. I was in the top five.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well done.
Yeah. I would say very well done. Yeah. Considering all those aspects, the grizzly, you got me intense there too. Just, I think each and every one of us, and probably the listeners as well, put yourself in that situation. And as I was listening to you describe this, I'm putting myself in how I would react. And yeah, very unsettling. No matter what, when you become the prey, when you're used to being the predator, is just, especially you, having the North American big slam and everything, being a successful archer, all those things. It's just, yeah. And you being stubborn too. I can be stubborn about some things, but most things I try to ebb and flow.
The grizzly bear thing is really interesting now, because I get to hear everybody's opinions on and the misconceptions about grizzly bears. They're very, very dangerous. And I see these videos online now, people like walking up trying to video one that they see in the wild, and how many attacks there were this year. And
natural selection.
People really do believe that they're not dangerous. And I got comments all the time like, the bear wasn't going to hurt you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I disagree with you.
Well, you got three game wardens here, and we'll tell you.
Yeah, and again, to pony up on what Glenn said earlier, those are the same people that haven't been in the woods and really interacted in real woods off a paved trail around grizzly bears. We've had so many encounters up here in Northwest Montana, Rose, Glacier Park, fatalities. We've had problem bears dumped in our yak wilderness in my backyard, treeing hunters during archery season. I mean, there is a legitimate danger out there. And the last thing we want to do is have to take one for defense, but that's had to happen up here. And they've been investigated, and they've been investigated appropriately. But you're dealing with a very strong, you know, apex predator in their realm outside of us with tools. And they need to be respected for that. And they need to be understood, right?
Yeah, that's understanding them. And I think that people, because for the most part, I mean, they're not seeking you out. They're not a polar bear. They're not seeking you out. They're not coming to try to find you. In this situation, these bears were hungry. We were put in a situation where that food source is restricted from them.
Sure.
And it was getting later in the season. There was snow and they want to hibernate. And so I don't think he was really very old. I would imagine, just by gauging, you know, the size of our black bear here in Pennsylvania, I would guess he was probably 600 pounds, maybe a little bit bigger. So he wasn't a full grown grizzly bear. So, you know, a younger bear, just kind of wondering what I was, but he came in to see what I was. I piqued his interest. It doesn't mean that he wouldn't have made a decision based on that, though. They're not, they're not compassionate, you know, they're like, right. Oh, that's a person. You know what I mean? So, I don't think that they,
well, he's thinking, can I eat that?
You know, I mean, I was like a little nugget, and
risk versus reward,
you know, all that, like you said, all that food was gone and he was in his own episode of alone and he was getting hungry. So
survival for them. Right. Yeah. And they are an apex predator. They are going to win that, you know, that fight.
They're going to win. Nothing so, equal, just survival. Yeah.
Yeah. So people and the way that they understand grizzly bears, it's crazy to me the thoughts that people have and how they think they understand them, because we seem to have lost, because people see these videos on social media, like going up to bears. And I think there was just one of like some lady knocked a bear off a ledge because it was going to get her dog.
I saw that. Yeah. Like,
So people get, I think, desensitized to the real danger that's there and that respect that you need to have for them. So the comments that I get about how that grizzly bear was not going to hurt me, it's just crazy.
I mean, animals are all about food and all about breeding. That's their DNA, is survival. Yeah. And he was just figuring out, can I eat her? I'm like, risk versus reward. Am I going to, if I bite her, is she going to bite back? Or how hard is that? And how hungry am I? Yeah. That's what I've learned in my tenure. I'm sure you guys are very similar.
Definitely.
It was a pretty cool experience though. And then the people that are close to me here, my friends, when they watch it, you know, and I'm pretty distraught on there, they get pretty upset about it and how scary it was.
You were going to say something
like that? I think they're more scared for me than I, you know, I just don't remember. I remember the situation, of course. And I remember having to collect myself and work through that process. But it's pretty crazy. It was pretty emotional. It's funny how it hit home with so many people, like of my friends, you know, just how dangerous that situation was. Cause it is a very real situation.
Yeah.
I think your mindset is commendable. I mean, I'm not going to tell you anything you don't know, but for some people listening, maybe when that guy came up and said, you weren't going to fight that, he wasn't telling you what you were going to, he was sharing what he was going to do. He would not have fought that bear.
Yeah.
So I just think it's funny to, you know, get into people's mind. That's not what you were going to do. He just flat out would have lied there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of funny because you don't have to tell him, of course you were going to fight that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just kind of.
Yeah, that's your plan every second that you're out there. That was my plan anyways. I mean, I had so many grizzly bears, I had to plan for that. And when you say mindset, that was something that I talked about when I got back from the show. Mindset training, I think, is a very important part of anything that you do. If you plan for it, you can deal with it so much better, because people say that all the time. It's crazy to watch you so upset and then to just collect yourself and get through that situation. I think that I've had to do that coming from such a rough childhood. That was a quality I had to develop to get through those things.
I was going
to
say, you didn't learn it. You lived it. That's why you are the way you are. I'm not a psychologist, but you got that training long ago. That's why you are the apex.
Yeah. I did have to learn that as a child. And I think that switching back over to the nonprofit, in my nonprofit, a majority of what I do is I help, I say traditionally underrepresented, and by that I mean I work closely with the foster care program, because I was a foster child when I was growing up, eventually once I was taken from that situation. And so those children that have been in situations similar to mine, or maybe not have been in a dangerous situation, but are now in, you know, another home, they maybe don't get that opportunity to get out there and experience some of the things that other kids get to do. And so I work very closely with those children that had lives similar to mine when I was growing up. And so that's a very big part of my nonprofit, because I think had somebody been there when I was a kid to just be kind to me and offer me, you know, an avenue for, you know, getting out there and doing what I had fallen in love with doing as a, even more so as an adult, I think it would have been easier for me as a child. So I try to play a bigger role in their lives now, but I work with, grandparents raising their grandchildren, because there's such a large number in Pennsylvania of grandparents that can't get their grandchildren out there. So the groups that I work with are very close to my heart because of my childhood. So I'm very lucky that I'm where I am and that I'm in a position that I'm in to be able to do that for those children now. So hopefully it won't be so hard for them.
Yeah.
I hate to interrupt. I have to go get a long-tailed weasel out of an elderly woman's cupboard. So
Duty calls.
I don't mean to interrupt, Rose, and nice to meet you.
Game Wars. That's right. Right there, absolutely. Glenn. We get it, man.
It's an elderly lady. Otherwise, I'd say figure it out.
Yeah. No, I get it. Well, thanks for joining us for the interim, Glenn.
Thanks for having me. Pleasure to meet you both virtually.
You too, Glenn. Stay safe, brother.
I can't say that I'm going to go watch alone, but I do want to look at a map. I'm that visual. Like, I'm like, where was she? I want to see that.
Where's she? Yeah. Where did I trap?
Yeah. So super cool. Pleasure to meet you. I'll be safe. Thank you, Wayne.
Take care, Glenn. Thanks.
Yeah, and Rose, to your point, I mean, you're such a godsend for these kids because you lived it with the struggles growing up. And then at the same time, Wayne and I have done this our whole careers, and I'm doing it with teenagers and pre-teenagers I'm meeting back in California when I'm doing business in my home state that I have no relation to, but I'm just impressed by. And they are such good kids that just are, what's it like to go hunt a hog? What's it like to go shoot for the first time? Can I go? Can I see it? And, you know, they don't have a lot of means, or they're coming from a struggling family, but their hearts are in the right place. They're motivated. Working with one kid in particular now. And it is the best thing we can do with anything we do in life as conservationists is pay it forward that way. And the rewards, and I know I'm preaching to the choir here with all three of us, the rewards are just amazing. And it feels so good to see that light in their eyes when they are out at first light, chilly in that witching hour right after sunrise, and then sunset, and see animals come out and work optics and track. And it's just a magical thing. And we're losing so much of that in the country right now with where we're going with for multiple reasons. So it's super cool that you can pay that forward and bring it back. And Alone is such a quote unquote sexy draw, scary type show for kids that haven't had outdoor experience coming from urban areas. Mm-hmm. And it's a perfect storm to get our message out and build some character and build some self-confidence and reliance with struggling backgrounds, like some of us have shared. So I think it's awesome that you're doing it. And certainly we're going to do everything we can to promote you and your message, and just super awesome to have you on our show. Yeah. And what a story.
Thank you. Love the name of your nonprofit. I've always said this on this podcast, names have power. And this is my quest. You know what? It brings me back again to the 80s. Glenn will bust my chops, but that Vision Quest movie, The Wrestler.
And
it's just an iconic show. And yeah, so this is my quest. And it's just going to achieve that, Rose, Anna. You're definitely going to achieve that.
Thank you.
And remember, a quest usually never ends. And when it does, you know, but you've got it going on. And we appreciate you sharing your time on Alone with us. And your nonprofit, This Is My Quest. So, and people can find you online. Do you want to do a little spiel where we can find This Is My Quest?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have a website, www.thisismyquest.org. So that tells a little bit more. And there's some videos on there that we'll link off to YouTube. We have a YouTube channel. My YouTube channel is still under Rosanna Moore. So that kind of has the videos from Alone and some of the projects that we work on. I not only work with youth, but I also work with a lot of women who would like the opportunity to get into the outdoors. And so one young lady in particular, she's a quadriplegic. And so that ease of access is not there for her. So her story is kind of on there and how we are getting her into the outdoors and getting her hunting. So you can go to the website, and we have a Facebook page, This Is My Quest. And I think everything else is really under Rosanna Moore. So you'll be flooded with children's activities. So I have 50 children in my archery club that just started in December, and I'm in a very small town. So I've attracted quite a bit of archery attention. So that's primarily what you see now. We're gearing up for a pheasant project where the kids will incubate pheasant eggs. We're working with the Pennsylvania Game Commission to visit the pheasant farm, and
awesome.
They'll get to learn all about pheasant habitats, and they'll raise them, and then four hunters will be chosen to harvest those in the fall. So we go through the whole, when we go on a whitetail hunt, it's not just a whitetail hunt. You have to learn all about whitetail before you can go on a whitetail hunt. And then we, you know, you have to go through our training to be able to shoot. And it's a whole process. So it's not just about exposure, but it's a lot about education.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us on the Thin Green Line, Rosanna.
Thank you so much for having me.